next speaker is Anthony Hogan, and Anthony is the director of the National Institute for Rural and Regional Australia at the Australian National University. And we've asked him to talk about some work that he's currently doing in the Namoi, and he's doing it around St George and Wakery in the Riverland as well, about securing the socio-economic well-being of rural Australia. So I'll hand over to Anthony.
Thanks, Paula. Greg, I'm happy to give a paper on localism and skip this one if you want to. If I could maybe just make a few key comments, because the project I want to talk about is really how at a local level we actually get localism working and turn it around, can it work for us? I mean, one of the key tenets or principles we will put forward that I will argue is that until we can raise revenue at the local level, localism is not going to work. I don't want to risk a cheap shot, but, you know, those of us who have been driving around rural New South Wales since the rain will find it very hard to find a coherent piece of blacktop to drive across versus all the potholes and the damage that have been done to the road services by the rain. Local communities don't have the money to put into fixing that. I think, as the Moree Council said, the next 12 months' budget is entirely spent just on fixing the road base. One of the problems we've got with this whole concept of localism is that if it doesn't work, it may well be our fault. In the sense that if we can't join the dots, one of the questions we'll ask, of course, is, are there dots to join? And one of the key issues in terms of creating sustainable rural communities are what are the resources we have at our disposal in our local area to maintain the viability of our towns. So something I'm going to come back to. We can't work from the assumption, which is suggested by localism, that every community is going to be sustainable. Some towns are set up on the basis of the Cobb & Co. coach. It's gone. You know, we now have cars and we have planes, and the reason some communities were established is no longer there. So part of unpacking the rhetoric of localism is kind of a question of Canberra pushing back down to us to make the hard decisions. That we need to decide whether we're viable and convince them that we're viable rather than perhaps the other way around. I don't blame them in one sense because, you know, what minister wants to come out and say, well, you're going to survive and you're not? I mean, it's politically untenable, isn't it? The paper I'm going to present today is about the work the team of researchers have been doing with the support of the Cotton CRC, for which we're very grateful, and in collaboration with the Namoi CMA. And we particularly wanted to come to terms with the question, how do we actually determine on what basis, you know, we could be sustainable, we could be viable, which are the dots we should be investing in, how do we connect them up, what are the key dots that need to be on that table? I can only speak to part of the research today. Is it going to work for me? That's more like it. Great. There's a series of projects going on simultaneously, and I'd like to recognise Dr. Kim Horton, who's here with us. Kim's looking at the economic basis of what makes for sustainable regional communities, and he'll be talking later today. We've also got demographic histories, you know, people come and go, and indeed, as we see, towns, people in towns actually do turn over, even in rural towns, you know, a constant turnover around about 20%. We hear a lot about the efficacy and the importance of community leadership. Jen Cleary is going to be here tomorrow. She's coming in late. She'll be here for dinner. And she's been working here in the Namoi, as well as in Wakery, which is in the Riverlands, for those of you who are not familiar with the part of South Australia, where we have citrus and grapes as the main production area. So how does community leadership play a part? I mean, one of the problems with the localism model, as the Minister described it, sure, Greg, we get to rate our projects at the RDA level, and they go up, but there's another little committee off to the side who also helps inform the Minister and make sure we've got the decision right. So by the time the decision comes down, it's not necessarily out of the decision that the local people prioritise. My work, particularly with Rob Tanton, we're looking at the social aspects. I mean, how can we adapt in the face of constant stresses and change? And we talk about how much petrol's left in the people's emotional tank of our communities to keep going in the face of stress. And what's great in this research is we see that the tanks are pretty full. But at the end of it, we want to create a decision support tool that you can use in talking with people such as Canberra in saying, well, when you make these kind of decisions, this is kind of how it's going to play out in our community. And what I'm going to show you today is the first part of that, where we've gone out now to 2,000 people in the Namoi, in St George, and in Wakery, to get their views about what makes for a sustainable community, what would make them stay versus what would make them leave town. And so that's basically what we're going to cover today. So just to give you an idea in of who we've talked to, it's sort of actually went up over 2,000 people. It's slightly biased because the CMA from Namoi kindly put up a good bit of the money, so they got half the sample. Thank you, Jeremy. As well as the folks from St George and down in Wakery in South Australia. So what I'm going to give you, first of all, is just a bit of a high level of, if you like, some of the issues that are at stake here in terms of people's capacity to adapt, their sense of well-being, but then coming down to the decisions about whether we would stay or go and what we think might make for sustainable communities for ourselves. What we're going to do in our next phase, which we haven't done yet, is bring Kim's data in, because at the moment all we've got is community opinion as to whether I would stay or go and whether I think my community is viable. And we want to interface that with the data that underpins the viability of the local community, the economy that keeps the thing ticking over. And that's the part where we then interface the two in terms of the vision for the local community. Because I think under localism, Greg, the thing we really need to be talking about is when we're joining those dots, we're investing public money that actually results in public good and longer-term benefit. Sometimes there's no cost-benefit in that sense. We just want to fix those roads and we need the money for it. And I think the Minister did refer to what's happening in Europe, and one thing I do agree with him is what they're seeing in Europe post the GFC is that if we're not investing the money, A, in the local region, and that economic benefit stays in the local region, then the local region's not sustainable. And the risk we have here is, with some ways of investing localism, is we can invest in certain infrastructure where there's no sustained regional economic benefit. The money comes in to build a port or whatever, but the jobs are not in our area, they don't stay in our area, the income doesn't stay in our area, and we end up with what we call bypass economics, in the sense that the money's spent, but it bypasses the local benefit. And so we have national money being spent, allegedly under the notion of localism, but is the local community actually getting the sustained benefit from it? I'm stealing a bit of Kim's thunder in terms of sustained economic local benefit, but I know he's only got 5 or 7 minutes to talk this afternoon, but some of that is not all my original thinking. Part of my team's adage is this: if you've seen one country town, you've seen one country town. And what's really interesting here in the data I'm about to show you is the diversity just in three communities. And during the time that we collected this data, we saw St George devastated by recent inundations. We saw the tragic murder of a policeman in Namoi at the time we were collecting data about people's feelings of personal safety. And Wakery was the last community in Australia still under exceptional circumstances assistance for drought. So three very different communities, all under quite different stresses at the time we were collecting our data. But interestingly, down the bottom here of our screen, that perhaps in the face of the most recent disaster, the people in the St George actually pulled together to most. And we find that to be quite consistent in our literature over time. Key messages here in terms of people coming to terms with the idea that we do need to share water for the environment, we do need water for industry. But also that, say again in St George, which came out interestingly again, how we look around to how our local community leadership and whether we feel we can trust in them to progress our interests. One of the problems with data like this is when you do research on communities and decision making is that not everyone loves everyone. You know, and you get a nice distribution, and in our data, you know, 20% who hate your council and 20% who think they're fantastic and so forth. And there are different issues going on, as we know here, in terms of coal seam gas versus down in Wakery in terms of changing the citrus industry and the role the community can play. But at the same time, we see here, you know, people's ability to, or insight in terms of recognising, say, like in Wakery, that climate change is impacting on them, but at the same time, they think they can get some agreement about how they're going to go forward. Interesting in terms of people's capacity to deal with diversity in their community and different ethnic communities, if you like, their capacity to agree, their capacity to trust in each other and to trust in the local community. Just the whole notion of what we call social capital and that the different levels of social capital in the community, you know, can I rely on someone to drive me up to the next town, for example, if I need to go to the doctor? So these levels differ in our communities, but they are important in terms of what might make for our sustainability. Here we've got issues around the environment, and we see again the issue of biodiversity and people recognising the importance of biodiversity. And down in Wakeree, where they don't have much ground cover, I don't know if many of you have been down there to see the regional area, it's really very much dependent on irrigation for agriculture. The tensions there, both in terms of communities to see for our sustainability, for our industries, that we need water for our industries, but at the same time we need water for our environment, and how we're going to trade those things off. So in terms of the recent weather events which we're seeing, we saw that we asked people in terms of had their financial well-being or their emotional well-being be affected by the recent events. And we saw that the St George people particularly were saying that more likely to agree that their financial well-being had been adversely affected by the drought and by flooding. Whereas in Wakeree, which where the drought was longest and most sustained, were saying they were more financially affected by drought. And then we see emotional well-being being affected by flood and drought, again in St George versus the Namoi. Whereas the emotional well-being of people in Wakeree being affected by drought. And what we're interested in here and what we'll do in time, again, is this question of all the stresses under which a community faces and then their capacity to make decisions going forth. So part of this kind of background information is kind of saying we're recognising that there are pressures on community, and then, as we said, how much petrol is left in the tank to make the kind of decisions we need to go forward. And it was well and good for the Minister to say about people participating in all these community activities like RDAs, but we've got all this other stuff going on around us as well. Some interesting things in terms of job security we saw through the data in the sense that, in one sense, people have a strong sense in rural communities of having good job security, but at the same time, maybe their only job option, if that job goes, then we may be in trouble, and differing earning capacities across different communities. So keeping all those things in mind, we went out to communities and asked them in terms of basically, on the mix of factors that are going on, what would, you know, for you, you'd want to continue to live in your community or not? And I guess by analogy, if I could get you to think about it in terms of you're going to go for holiday, for example, and you need to line up in terms of, am I going to stay in Australia, go overseas, am I going to fly, am I going to get by boat, am I going to go camping, am I going to stay in hotels, how much am I going to spend, and all those kind of questions. So when you make your holiday decision, you actually have to line up all those competing values in one go. In terms of our decisions of where we're going to live and have our lives and so forth, we have to simultaneously trade off a whole bunch of things about our jobs, their security, the amount of money we're going to get, the health services we're going to get, the education for our kids and so forth. So we put this to people in terms of their question about what makes for them for a sustainable community that they actually want to stay. And we're very much interested in identifying the factors that which people thought were important or deal-breakers in terms of whether they'd stay in their towns or not. So we asked people in terms of 13 variables, in terms of whether changes in full and part-time work, the number of young people in town, the number of women in town, the number of family and friends, whether population changed or died, whether you continue to have a community or social life and whether your friends and family stayed around, whether you could access education services, health services, whether it was aged care, whether business grew or died in your community, the impact of tourism and changes to the environment. So I'm wondering if you just might do a little mental check for yourself at the moment, if you looked at that list and asked yourself, for you, in terms of where you live, what might be the deal breakers for whether you wanted to continue to stay in, living in your town or not? What were the really, really critical things that might matter? So basically people had a series of forced choices to make in terms of a whole bunch of variables and a whole bunch of stats we won't go into at the moment. Paula tells me I've got 5 minutes left, so we'll talk about what did people choose. So on the basic scenario, of everything staying the same as you pretty much experience at the moment, about 80% of people across our study would basically stay in their existing communities. And it wasn't particularly different even if we optimised it, so everything got a bit better, basically people would still stay. But the key question might be in terms of when would people go? And the three things that really came out of the research is that we need our human support infrastructure. And if we come back to Simon's earlier comment that the investments need to be cost beneficial, well, Wakeree in one sense is in the middle of nowhere. But, you know, they have to have a hospital because if you get trashed on the Stuart Highway, that's the only place to take you. So it's not all about the cost-benefit. It's about what us as a community might want to make, place demands on our state to support us. So health service was the number one. Education services and a good community life. And what's really interesting, when we look at the distribution, you can see how big these three factors stand out against everything else. And what I tried to do with this model last night, I tried to break it. I thought, okay, maybe it's my job that's really important. Maybe it really is the change in a small business here or there. I couldn't break the model last night in terms of against these three key outcomes. And so what we can see is that as our industry and our economic base will change, and Kim will talk more about the importance and the dynamics of that, our decisions in terms of me, and even if I'm in vulnerable employment, if I don't think I can get another job, it's these three factors which are deciding whether I'm going to come or go or not. Now, they do break up a bit when we change them by age groups, but as a community, these are the deal breakers. Do we have our health services? Do we have our education? Do we have our community? And just to give you an idea, this is what happens. If we lose our hospitals, you can see somewhere around about 10 or 11% of people would go. If you lose our GP, say like particularly over here in Wakery, you know, it's a long drive to the next doctor. You're going to lose a fair bit of people, particularly like in an ageing community. But after that, education, we see in St George, maybe 8% would go if the kids have to travel further to go to school. Sporting teams would lose 4%. That's pretty impressive in terms of who would go. And that number will go up if we reduce the age group. But after that, they're really small numbers, 0.02, 0.3%. 0.6%, you know, in terms of the number of older or younger women in the town. Family and friends, looks like they're not that valued after all, folks. You can go off on your bike, you know. The reaction to tourism, to work, young people leaving. I mean, there's a grief factor with community change, but it doesn't necessarily mean the rest of us are going to get up and go. Change in part-time work, local environmental changes. Look, I mean, it wouldn't even ping on the radar, really. And employment. Change the population. So where are we now, David, if you just wouldn't mind, just very quickly, that last point. So we've got this decision-making tool going, and you can play with it later, but basically what you can do in your community, David's going to click on this one in the middle here, thanks, David, right there, and watch this number down here. Let's do it again, thanks. Okay, and do it again. So as you can change the levels, you can see what's going to happen in your community in terms of the people who might come and go. And so we've got this in terms of community preferences, and now what happens next when we interface the economics and the longer-term demographic trends, we can give you a better idea, or you'll be able to get a better idea in your own community as to how policy is going to play out in your area. And so we have this now for three communities, St George, the Namoi and Wakery, and we hope that with further support and collaboration with local communities, this might be able to become available more nationally over the next couple of years. Thank you.
Right on time. Academics normally don't take much notice of that thing, so it's great to have him come right on time.
Applied researchers, Paul.
Applied researchers, sorry, Anthony. Do we have any questions for Anthony? John.
Now, John got the question last time.
Anthony, I think last time you were talking about farming community.
Yes.
Is that more general than any data?
Yes, that's now, in terms of the data, it's probably the earliest slide I can show you. It's now townies, farmers, hobby farmers, and importantly, community leaders. And we've got a whole bunch of data in there in terms of capacity to work together and our human well-being. So if we're interested in the vitality or the well-being of our community leaders, we can now just see how much petrol they've got left in the tank, how much support they've got in the tank from their local communities. And that can be all broken up. David, if you just click on the word filters up there for me, probably pointing to the screen won't help, just there. Just click on filters and calculate filter. Every question that's now in the database, you can now filter this decision tool by. So age, sex, what farmer, townie, community leader, however you want to break that up. Then, thanks, Dave, you can just click that off over here, thanks. And that just then tells you who's going to come and go. I broke it down to 40% leaving last night. If you looked at the under 45s, like the 50s, and we took out the sport, and we took out the health and the education, you look at 40% of the community leaving. But again, it came back to those three critical factors. Farmers were different, as we saw last time. The local employment fluctuations doesn't matter so much. But I was really surprised. Most town people didn't think if they lost their jobs that they would go. It had almost no effect. It was really surprising. So this is where we need now Kim's data to interface to shock that a bit, to make sure that's just not a naive opinion and actually it can be sustained. Thank you.
Linda, there's just Revel up the front. Oh, sorry, Greg.
Yes, thank you. I'm interested in the fact that the quality of our relationships didn't seem to come out in the research to account. And I thought that would probably come out as number one, followed by health and education afterwards.
It probably does in the sense of... if I could just... I don't know, how quickly can I go back here? Oh, Greg, can I go back to the other screen? Yes. To my presentation? It's probably there, Greg, and I missed over it because there's actually 126 slides in this presentation, so we went over it pretty quickly. We looked at what made for adaptive capacity, and our capacity to get on with each other was a key driver, for example, of affecting environmental change. So that is actually in the data set, but probably just not in this presentation.
It's Rebel Black from One Image. My question is around industry, and I just wonder whether the research reflects the impact of a closing of the industry or the decline of the industry at all. I mean, if we're in an open mining community and there's been fluctuations and changes with that, and obviously the population and demographic reflect that, and I wonder if the research also has the capacity to do that.
Very much so, Rebel, and Kim's just ducked out to talk to the media, but I otherwise would have flicked that question to him to answer. But this is, we're looking for this interaction in terms of the changing economic base. Particularly, we've presented here three communities at the moment who are primarily dependent on agriculture for the dynamism of the local economy. And we saw in one of the slides there where, like in the Namoi, people are particularly worried about the impact of coal seam gas mining, and whether 14% said they'd probably think about going because of the impact. But again, yeah, that's the interface we need now to have with my data set and Kim's to see, what does long-term fly-in, fly-out mean for a regional economy in terms of our local jobs and whether the money actually stays in or not. And where we need to tell Simon where to spend the money. And the reason we're building this tool is it's well and good that Canberra bureaucrats have this tool and they know what's kind of going on. They don't have one as good as this one yet. But we don't have the data to argue back with. So that's why we want to make these things now interconnect, and that's our job over the next 6 months. To get these things working. So these three communities will have access to that as we develop it because we've got the economic data for the three regions as well. And Kim's paper, Kim's just finished his paper, which looks at all the regional economic basis for the three communities, and if you have a chat to him, he might be able to take you through it.
So, one more question, Linda. It's Ingrid up the back there.
Jeremy, did we get catchments or did we get... We can do the towns. We've got postcode data, so we can cut it by postcode. And in the early slide, so we've got Tamworth, including Walcher, Gunnedah, Warrumbungles, Liverpool Plains, Narrabri and Walgett. In terms of the sample, we could chop it up that way. In terms of the community work, we're doing it solely in Gunnedah, and that was the local decision as to why we gave priority to Gunnedah, because we could only do one community. But I take your point, it's more a region than a community. But yes, you can chop it up and redo it that way. The only problem is how small your sample gets, whether it gets wobbly.
Okay, we might look to wrap that up then. Thank you very much, Anthony, for that. It was very interesting.